A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, and welcome to the final part of the Probably True HIV series, made possible by the British Podcast Award Pulse Fund and the Wellcome Trust. Actually, this is part one of the final part. I'm doing a Harry Potter, but not because I'm making stupid amounts of money off of it like J.K. Rowling did, but more because there's a lot of information and it's a lot to take in, so I thought I'd divide it into two and make it a little bit easier for your brain. Anyway, here's part one of my chat with handsome Dr. Sean Cassidy.
You're listening to Probably True. Please be aware that this podcast may contain strong language and adult themes. It would be boring without them.
I'm joined today by the lovely, handsome Dr. Sean Cassidy. Hello, handsome Dr. Sean Cassidy. How are you?
Hi, Scott. How are you? I'm very well, thank you.
Excellent. It's a pleasure to have you in my little cupboard.
I'm honoured to be asked. Thank you so much for having me.
You're more than welcome anytime. Give us your job title because it's quite impressive and I can't remember it off the top of my head.
Oh, I don't think it's impressive. I'm a specialty registrar, technically a junior doctor, but I'm a trainee in sexual health and HIV medicine. It's fun. I like it.
Good.
Yeah.
So basically, your day job is looking at manky willies.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I've seen thousands, and well, I'm proud of it.
You're not special. I've seen thousands as well, you know. Do you specialise in HIV? Or?
Well, the specialty is genital urinary medicine. So as part of that, I do a bit of everything. So a bit of sexual health, a bit of HIV, a bit of contraception. So it's quite varied within quite a small niche, I guess.
I'm curious, what made you want to go into this branch of medicine in general?
I don't know. I think it's just a morbid curiosity in what other people get up to, and what better way to live vicariously through other people than through their sex lives. I mean, looking back, like when I was like 9 or 10, I distinctly remember bringing in like this medical encyclopedia that I'd got for Christmas and opening it at the page of male and female genitals and giving like a science lesson to my bemused and bewildered classmates about what like penises and vaginas were. Wow. And little did I know that here I would be some years later
several
doing basically the same thing.
Wow. I mean, I had a similar education in that kind of thing, but it was a copy of Razzle that someone found in a hedge. It wasn't an encyclopedia.
This is rural Ireland. They don't have pornography there.
Oh no.
It was pre-internet.
Gosh, you are showing your age.
Yes.
I'm so curious about some of the things you've seen and presumably mopped up. Anyway, when it comes to bumming and safe sex and all the naughty, fun, squirty stuff, who better to give us all the facts than handsome Dr. Sean Cassidy,
who's seen
thousands of willies?
That's going on my Twitter handle.
Let's start with just a simple one. What is HIV?
Well, that's a very good question.
Thank you. Quite proud.
Did you make that up yourself?
Yeah, I thought about Googling it, but then I thought, why bother? Yeah.
So HIV is a virus. It stands for human immunodeficiency virus, and it's a virus that affects humans, can be passed on by various means, and has an impact on the body's immune system, hence the title.
With you so far.
It was first discovered in the early 80s, or it came to light that it was affecting groups of gay men in the kind of San Francisco and New York areas who were contracting quite a rare form of pneumonia that is generally only associated with in people who've got really weak immune systems. Although it's thought that actually, there were cases, you know, way earlier, but that just weren't identified because they weren't in clusters. So this was like the first time that it had been recognized as a pattern. And the first few years sound like so confusing in the sense that there was such little certainty on as to what was causing these group of symptoms and these kind of disease patterns in these men. And then subsequently, obviously, they discovered that it wasn't anything to do with your sexuality. Actually, heterosexual people can get it as well, just as easily.
Oh, it's a gay disease and things like that.
It was originally called gay-related immunodeficiency disease, so it's called GRID. So yeah, talk about like a judgment call. And I think in many ways that, you know, that kind of stigma persisted for decades after that was kind of disproved by the science, you know, as with anything like that, I think. This is an amazing book and documentary called How to Survive a Plague, which is a real eye-opener. Like, it must have been such a confusing time when the scientists, like, at the forefront of their fields just didn't have a clue what was going on or what was causing this. Like, they didn't even know that it was a virus.
Yeah, because it's a retrovirus, isn't it? Something like...
Yeah. Yeah.
Which presumably doesn't have anything to do with disco music and flared trousers.
Well, it depends on what you're up to, but again, without going into the, you know, the nitty-gritty of it, I mean, these viruses are very, very good at avoiding detection because they require genetic material from the host in order to survive. So they kind of integrate themselves.
So they're kind of hiding.
Yeah, within plain sight. Oh. And so with HIV, so the type of cells that it generally infects are white blood cells, so a specific type of white blood cell called CD4, which you may have heard.
Oh yeah, it's one of the best ones.
Yeah, it's my fave. And for that reason, it's hidden from the body's own defense system. So it's incredibly sophisticated. And as well, the virus can mutate extremely readily. So when it's kind of transcribing its own material, it kind of makes loads of mistakes, which you would think might be a bit of a flaw. But actually, it means that it can avoid, you know, treatment, basically.
So when you say transcribing its own, is that like when it kind of copies itself?
Full
so it's
copying.
Like, right. So it's like a photocopy, but it's like blurry. Like when you copy a copy. If you do it enough times, it gets slightly different.
Exactly. So like Chinese whispers or something, like it alters slightly different on each iteration. And that's why a HIV vaccine hasn't been found yet. And that work is still ongoing because once you've created a vaccine, by that point, the virus has changed so many thousands of times. It's impossible to kind of have one fits all solution to the problem, I guess.
Got you. So you said there's different ways of passing it on.
HIV can be present in several bodily fluids. The ones that are most relevant for your listeners, or indeed for anyone,
trying to say,
or indeed for anyone, are genital secretions. So, mental image. So, semen, obviously, but also vaginal mucus, anal mucus.
Oh, I love that second album. It was really good.
Exactly, and blood as well, and also breast milk as well.
I would not have guessed that one. That's really interesting.
Yeah. So that obviously informs the ways in which it can be passed on. So yeah, it's passed on predominantly through unprotected or condomless sexual intercourse. It can be passed on through blood transfusions, sharing needles, and it can be passed on through childbirth and breastfeeding as well.
One of the main things, I suppose, that's worth noting is that you can't get it from kissing. So presumably you can't get it from oral sex either. Can you get it if you
if you try really, really hard? It's like
it's
the risk.
The best way when you're sucking a dick is to really try. I don't want a half-hearted
really go for
blow
it.
Job.
So in the history of HIV, there have been instances of oral transmission, but they are so low. And when you think about it, how many instances of oral sex have ever happened in
today?
Yeah. What? Right now. The number of cases is vanishingly low. So I would consider it to be not zero risk, but close to zero. There is something I've heard where you'd have to swallow like a gallon of someone's saliva in order to have enough virus for it to be transmitted.
I have met people who kiss like that though.
Yeah, I listened to that episode. Not fun.
Yeah, no.
Sorry to bring
drowning
that up again.
Slobber.
Trauma.
And I suppose the safest kind of sex is just having a wank together.
Or alone.
I feel very seen.
The safest is no sexual contact.
but that's
not realistic for most people. So obviously condoms will reduce the risk, which is fine for most people, but there are other methods as well. You might have heard of PrEP.
What's PrEP?
PrEP stands for pre-exposure prophylaxis. The way I kind of describe it is like taking the contraceptive pill if you're a woman to avoid pregnancy. So it's about taking a tablet, to stop you from acquiring HIV, should you be in a situation where you might be at risk of that. And there's different ways that you can take it. So you can take it every single day, what we call daily treatment.
Funny that. That's or, a good
name for it, yeah. yeah, fancy technical term.
Yeah.
Or you can take it episodically or event-based. And that means you've probably got to be a bit more forward-thinking because you've got to take it at least 2 hours before the sex. And it's slightly different, so you have to take a double dose.
To kind of get enough of it into your system in
exactly.
time. I read something about every other day or something as well.
So there's different kind of strategies. Basically, the thinking behind it is that if you are taking it at least 4 days a week, then it's likely to kind of be effective. So the T's and S's means that you're taking it every day that begins with a T or an S, so Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, Sunday, or any variation on a theme. Every other day, again, would work if you're taking it 4 times a week. The issue with that is that if you start kind of missing the odd dose here or there, that would concern me. It's just safer to take it every day, and then if you miss the odd dose, then it's not likely to have any impact on its effectiveness. But it's been a really amazing tool. Like, so we've seen HIV rates amongst gay men and bisexual men in London like collapse over the last few years. And it's not all due to PrEP. There's lots of other stuff going on as well that's important to talk about. But it's been mind-blowing in terms of how it's changed that and changed attitudes around sex and around HIV. You know, of course, with HIV, there's always been stigma around it. I feel like we're kind of chipping away at it. So there's still a lot of stigma, but attitudes are changing. So it's good.
So if I come in and to the clinic and I say, help me, handsome Dr. Sean, I was taking PrEP, but I've forgotten a couple of days. I had condomless sex with someone because I didn't realise I'd forgotten. Mm. And it's been 3 or 4 days since I took a pill and the sexy times was last night. What would happen then?
Okay, fine. Well, I mean, obviously we have to take each case on its case-by-case basis. So it would depend on the exact number of pills you'd missed and when exactly this sex was and the type of sex, etc. If you'd missed a significant amount of PrEP and you were still within the window, we would start you on PEP, which is post-exposure prophylaxis.
Okay.
Which has been around for a lot longer than PrEP has. And PEP is where you can take HIV treatment after the event. So right. PrEP is about being prepared, you know, as in doing it in advance, and PEP is for after the event, I guess. And you've got a 72-hour window in which you can start that
cool.
after the sex that you've had.
So but it's 3 days, is it?
It's 3 days, but also don't use it as I'll just sit around for 3 days. The sooner you do it, the better, as soon as possible, really. So certainly within 24 hours. But obviously, if it's later than that, it should still be effective.
So PrEP is like the contraceptive pill that you take so you don't get pregnant. Mm. And PEP, then the post-exposure, is like the morning after pill, essentially.
Yeah, that's kind of a very crude, but I think,
sorry.
You know... No. No, like, sorry, it's not a diss. That's how I describe it. It's not exactly the same, but it's kind of, yeah, similar.
On the same lines.
Yeah.
Well, that's good to know. Hmm. So what happens then if I'm outside that way? If I come to you and I say, oh, I had sex last week and my PrEP had run out and I've just been very busy. I couldn't come into the clinic, you know. I had spreadsheets to look at. I'm a very busy person.
Well, look, we'd acknowledge your schedule.
And as you should.
We'd commiserate you on, you know, the fact that you're a very busy person. Look, I mean, if you're outside the 72 window period, there's nothing that you can do in terms of taking PEP. So we would obviously speak to you about what the likely risk was. So we've got lots of fancy spreadsheets we can show you to kind of...
I do love a good spreadsheet.
There's like really good guidance on what the risk is through each of the different types of sexual encounter that you might have. And sometimes that can be really reassuring for people. They can say, oh, actually, I was worried that it would be a 1 in 3 risk. And actually, I can see that it's a 1 in 200 risk. And that, for a lot of people, will be reassuring. And they'll go away and be like, right, I'll come back and retest in 4 to 6 weeks once I'm kind of outside the testing window period, basically. The tests that we do these days are really, really sensitive. They're really accurate. So like the blood test that we do looks for not just an antibody to HIV, which takes time to form, but also looks for the antigen, which is a part of the virus that kind of shows up much earlier, basically.
So if I've got this right, when you do the tests, you look for the thing that the body makes to try and get rid of HIV, which is the antibody, is that right? But you also look for part of the virus itself, the antigen.
Yeah.
So when I go for a HIV test, I come into the clinic. How much blood is it, like a needle in the arm kind of thing? And like, because I'm not a big fan.
Yeah, but there's different ways. So predominantly, it will just be a blood test that you'll have taken from your arm, and it's quite a small amount of blood. Like it's only a few mils.
It's like a teaspoonful.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Or you can do like a finger prick test, because it means that you do it there and then, and you get the result within seconds to minutes usually.
Right.
So there's different types of tests that can be done, and normally that's taken from like a capillary. So it's like they'll prick the side of your finger and then they'll kind of take a few drops that way.
Mm. And then you find out straight away, pretty much.
Pretty much, yeah. A lot of clinics will still have a week to 10 days waiting time for results. There's home testing services as well. So most London boroughs have access. You can just order a testing kit online. And again, that's awesome. That's a finger prick test, but it checks for not just HIV, but things like syphilis and hepatitis as well. And those results normally come back within 2 to 3 days as well. So it is moving in the right direction. But yeah, like, I mean, it's kind of crazy to think you'd have to wait like almost a month for like a HIV test, particularly, and this is like back in the days when actually a lot of people were getting infected. And like, it's like weighs so heavily on your emotional state, doesn't it, I guess? You can certainly live with HIV and not know about it for a long time. So there's something called a seroconversion illness that about 2/3 of people will get about a month or so after they've initially come into contact with the virus. And that's normally described as like the worst flu you've ever had. So if you've got it, you're normally kind of in bed for a good few days. You'll have raised lymph nodes, fevers, sore throat, quite often a rash on your body as well. But again, all of these are very non-specific symptoms that can be misdiagnosed as the flu or some other viral infection.
Oh, I was a bit ill a couple of weeks ago. Oh, I had a runny nose and a headache. I had a day in bed. You're probably not the same thing. You just take a Beecham's and get back to work. Go
but
on.
If you haven't been checked in a while, then run down to your local clinic.
Yeah, why not?
Exactly. Don't stress.
Or if you live in London, you can have it posted to you. So your very busy lifestyle, you can just do your own between spreadsheets.
Exactly. And in those cases, so with seroconversion, I mean, it's self-limiting in the sense that your body generally recovers and then you'll go back to a state of having no symptoms. And that's kind of generally the natural history of the virus. And it can take many, many years before you start to see some of the complications, I guess, of HIV. And the reason for that is because, as I said earlier, here comes the science, the way that HIV works is by infecting the white cells. It infects the immune system, basically. So it's not only just hiding from itself behind the body's defense, it's also knocking it out as it goes along. So when the virus is replicating inside the white cells, it gets to bursting point and it kind of explodes the cell, I guess, detonates it. Yeah. And then obviously over time, the number of white cells will reduce. And that obviously means that your body's immune system isn't able to function in fighting off the sort of bugs that people who are not living with HIV would be able to routinely fight off.
Interesting. And is that when HIV becomes AIDS then? A bit hazy on what the actual difference is.
Yeah. So AIDS is a term that has kind of gone out of fashion. It stands for acquired immunodeficiency syndrome. And it basically refers to the kind of constellation of diseases and infections that people who have low immunity as a result of HIV are more prone to acquiring. We tend these days to say advanced HIV because AIDS is incredibly stigmatizing for people living with HIV and people who lived through the tombstone ads of the 80s. For some people, that's etched on the back of their minds, I guess. That's kind of incorporates a number of different things, including infections like tuberculosis. This type of pneumonia called PCP, which is the pneumonia that was affecting those gay men back in San Francisco in the early 80s that they kind of linked together. And then there's types of cancer as well and malignancy that people living with HIV are more prone to getting if they're not on treatment. So Kaposi sarcoma, which is a type of cancer normally affecting the skin, so it gives you kind of purple blotches. So if you've seen the film Philadelphia, that's kind of exactly. So there's any number number of different things. But, you know, that's in untreated HIV. The important message is that for the majority of people who are taking treatment, then it has no effect on their health whatsoever. And they have a life expectancy that is at least as long as people who aren't living with HIV. And that's the great news.
Cool. So really, whether you think you might have it or not, get tested, find out.
Absolutely.
And then if you have, you can deal with it. And you go on to live a normal, happy life?
Yeah.
Well, say normal. I say happy.
What's normal?
You'll go on to have a life.
That seems like a good place to pause for the end of part one. Thanks for listening. I'll be back with part two soon.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
That was Probably True, the multi-award-winning storytelling series written and produced by me, the multi-award-winning Scott Fleshart. It was designed to remind all of my queer siblings that we are none of us alone. You can find links, transcripts of every episode, and all that good stuff at probablytruepodcast.com. If you enjoyed or found value in anything you've heard today, you can support the show on Patreon. Just go to patreon.com/probablytrue. And if you want to get in touch, just search Probably True Podcast on the socials.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.